Star inert gas has this property that it's crystal as well as superfluid. And because of these two properties, you can write the low energy theory just directly very generally. But you sort of pay for the generality. The negative is that there are some unknown coefficients or constants that you have to calculate. And we just give a method to calculate them using thermodynamic derivatives, derivatives of the free energy. So I'll just describe this relation, and then very quickly I'll discuss the application of this calculation to the neutron star crust. So this is a very classic nuclear physics paper. This is a mixed audience, so I'll just briefly describe what is going on here. What's happening is this is increasing density, so plots for increasing densities. On the x-axis is the distance. And what you see is that at low densities, you have a phase of matter which has protons, the lower curve, and neutrons clustered around in nuclei. Density increases, at some point, there's a neutron drip out, which means that there are neutrons also in between the nuclei. What is happening is that the nuclei are becoming more and more neutron rich. Eventually neutrons are coming into the medium or the bulk also. Finally, the thing to notice, as the density increases, the nuclei are coming closer, and the number of density of neutrons keeps on increasing. The horizontal axis is distance between, distance basically. So as you see, the distance between these clusters is decreasing, or density is increasing as you go deeper. So this is neutron drip, and eventually you get homogeneous matter somewhere down there. And as Alex talked about earlier, one thing that these neutrons do is form Cooper pairs. So they have some sort of a condensate. And one low energy mode in theory is associated with the phase fluctuations of this condensate. So this phi. Then secondly, since you have a crystal, you can have oscillation in the crystal. This forms the second set of boson modes, and the lattice phonons are psi's. Finally, there's one more mode in the system which is there at the low energy also, where these are the electrons, but the electrons you can add separately and they don't add to this picture. They play a role, but you can describe that separately. So I'll ignore them for now. And before I move, I'll just clarify what I mean by low energy here. So low energy here means thermal excitations, the temperatures of order keV's or tens of keV's, while the high energy excitations are like the gap, delta, and the chemical potential, etc. So looking only at the low energy, you can describe it by a simple Lagrangian if you note the following fact, that there are symmetries of the theory, which is if I change the phase by a constant amount, the energy of the system should not change. Or if I translate the whole crystal, B is just a constant here, then the energy should not change. So a simple description of the system is basically terms involving derivatives of the fields that ensures the symmetries talked about are maintained. So there are usual terms here. So basically, this is like, FI is like the compressibility for the superfluid. This V5 is the velocity for the superfluid. Then there's a kinetic term for the crystal. There are elastic coefficients for the crystal. And one interesting thing that comes out is that there's a mixing term between the superfluid and the lattice. And the question now is, how can we calculate these constants or coefficients? They are not constant because they depend on the density, but how can you calculate them? And point is, you can do something called the thermodynamic matching, which I'll describe now. So the next few minutes will be a bit more formal, but the end result of that will be useful because we'll get a compact expression for how you can calculate these coefficients. So let's do it in a simple case where you don't have the lattice. You just have the neutrons. So you start from the fundamental Lagrangian, which is just the grand canonical Lagrangian for the neutrons. But you do some simplifications. There's a cosmetic change you write, just a notation change. You write this as A mu times J mu, where A mu is some is basically the chemical potential still. But the more important change that you substantial change that you make is that you allow this chemical potential, this gauge field or the chemical potential to depend on the position for some time. Eventually, you will get this value once again at the end of the calculation, but by making it depend on the position, what you get is some, for some time you get some enhanced symmetry where this phase symmetry is now a local symmetry rather than just a global symmetry. So the use of this is that now, the only terms that you can write in the Lagrangian are terms which come in this combination because the transformation of phi should cancel the transformation of A mu. And you need to contract all the indices, so you only have this combination. So therefore, the Lagrangian has to be a function of x, but I write it as square root of x for convention's sake. So you have a simple functional form for F, or for the Lagrangian, and the main result is that this functional form is completely determined by the pressure as a function of the chemical potential. So this is the key. So you know everything about the system if you know the pressure as a function of the chemical potential. And then it's easy to get to the low energy theory because you can just do an expansion in the derivatives and then find these compressibilities in terms of the derivatives of the pressure with respect to the chemical potential and also the speed of sound that way. So this is very well known for the superfluid system. But this way of looking at things is useful because you get a very sort of automatic procedure to do it for any kind of broken symmetry. So this is the case we are interested in. You have a crystal as well as the superfluid. So you identify the conserved current, promote it to a local symmetry, write the low energy Lagrangian. And the point is that the Lagrangian is the same as the pressure expressed in all these invariant functions. So, okay, so now we can do it for this system that we're interested in, the superfluid and the lattice. So the new conserved charge is the stressed energy tensor because translations is a symmetry. The external fields is the metric. So, and finally, one, this is sort of an ease that you put in. You use a different sort of field to describe dynamics, but that's not so important. The important thing is that now, instead of having just one combination that your function depends on, you have three combinations, Y, WA, and HAB. Your Lagrangian is a function of these three invariant forms, and it's completely determined by the free energy. So that's the main point. So now you can do this expansion in the free energy, and this is the expression that you obtain. So at this point, this looks very messy. I mean, there are just lots of terms. You don't get any feeling for what's happening. There's some terms which are simple. There's the shear modulus, the compression modulus. This compressibility is as you'd expect for the superfluid. But now this has changed, and so there are a few changes, and I'll just go through the physical meaning of what has happened here. So the first field that we had was, one of the fields that we had was this HAB combination, which is purely the elastic combination. So what this encodes is how the crystal responds to changes in shape or size of the crystal. And I'll not belabor this point because, there are no new results with respect to this, but you can calculate these elastic constants using the derivatives of the free energies. So that's pretty standard. But the new thing is this derivative that comes in, which I would label as entrainment. So what's happened here is if there was no mixing between these superfluid and lattice modes, you would simply have a term which is this df by dy, just the number density of neutrons. But what has happened is, in addition, the number density of neutrons has been reduced from its value. Assuming this is positive, which it sensibly is. So the number density of neutrons outside is effectively reduced by this amount. So this is sort of entrained neutrons. What's nice is that these neutrons have not disappeared. They've gone into the kinetic term of the lattice. So if there was no entrainment, this won't be there. But this has increased the mass of the lattice points. So that makes sense. And the interesting thing is that the same term also appears in this mixing term between the superfluid and the lattice. So clearly, it should be important to calculate what this value is. Well, you can calculate it using a derivative or some sort of a correlation function. But the main intuition is that this term is related to the energy associated with relative motion between the superfluid and the lattice. That you can see by just expanding. So this is the velocity of the superfluid minus the velocity of the lattice. And finally, this term is simpler to understand intuitively. It's basically how does the energy change if you expand or contract the lattice because of the interaction with the superfluid. So when you put all of that together, you finally have this sort of a compact-looking expression for the mixing coefficient. So this is n-bound or n-entrained, as I said before. And this is related to the derivative of the number derivative of neutrons versus number derivative versus the protons. So now, with all this, you have all the information to calculate things in this situation. So, for instance, you have to start with some sort of a microscopic model now. So that's where the microscopics comes in to play. To calculate these derivatives, you have to start with some sort of a model. So the simplest thing you can do is, so the main quantity that appears that is difficult to calculate is this binding density, NB. The simplest thing you can say is, okay, the neutrons that are close to the nucleus, however you define close to B, are the bound neutron density. So you could, you can make an approximation there, and then the second term is basically related to the neutron-nucleus interaction. And what that gives you in a specific model, so here I used a specific mass table to calculate the mixing, so it gives the mixing between the two modes. So if there was no mixing, then you would have this V phi and V psi as a function of density, the two velocities. But mixing does what it should do. It mixes these two modes. And the point is that, so this is just an illustrative example of the effect. Point is that all, you can calculate every low energy property of the system by using these four quantities here. So the velocities, the mixing coefficients, and the elastic constant. And that's all there is to calculate in any particular model. So for instance, the specific heat, so now assuming that the mixing is small, you can write compact expressions for the specific heat. I forgot to close the bracket, but it's given by the velocity. You can calculate the mean free path of the superfluid phonons in terms of the lattice phonons. So the expressions are all given. For instance, you can calculate the thermal conductivity, which once again depends on the same few parameters. And I'll show one example where the calculation is actually practically important because it affects heat transport in the inner crust of neutron stars. So this thermal conductivity, it turns out, can be important not for typical stars, but for highly magnetized stars. So what's shown here, two different temperatures. Let's focus on one temperature, 10 to the power of 8 kelvins. So what is shown is the conductivity as a function of density. So this is above neutron drift, so less dense than neutron drift, so no neutrons there. But once the neutron drift starts, very rapidly you have this new mode of heat conduction. And the important thing to note is for magnetized stars, so this is the electronic heat conduction perpendicular to the magnetic field for pretty large fields, though. The conduction due to the superfluid phonons turns out to be actually comparable or even larger than the electronic heat conductivity. And this can affect the temperature evolution of stars. Okay, so the biggest uncertainty that comes in the calculation, so this is now, I won't try to give results here. I'll just try to describe the whole setup at this point and then where we are in this program, if you want. So the biggest uncertainty here is this N bound, the entrainment density. What really you want to do for calculating this quantity is some sort of a, well, it better be a quantum calculation, so it has some idea of what, I mean, this notion of neutrons close to the nucleus is a very hazy idea. So what you really want to do is a formal calculation where you calculate this correlation function. And well, before Alex does it, we'll have to use some sort of models to try to calculate this quantity. But the help you have is that everything can be calculated in a single model using these thermodynamic derivatives. And then you can just test with what the experiment gives you. So that's the main idea of the program. So I'll conclude. So these derivatives are basically generalizations of susceptibilities. Okay, so for future work, a more careful calculation of ND. But there's one more thing I'd just like to maybe ask practitioners of these numerical calculations with stars. One thing that you can calculate, which sort of I didn't mention much about, is the elastic constant. And the question is, what sort of accuracies would be possibly measurable in elastic constants if somebody wanted to do? So is it a well-motivated calculation or not? So that would be one question I can sort of put out. But that's basically what I wanted to say.
No questions? Okay.
Thank you again, and have some discussions about it later. Thank you.
Yeah.